some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's March 8th, 2011, and Laissez le bon temps rouler. Mardi Gras with 6 point and barrier. I'm with Ray Dieter, my co-host. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Ray, did I say that correctly?
I have no idea.
Laissez les bon temps rouler.
Down in New Orleans, they say les bon temps. They shorten everything down there.
So this is our Mardi Gras show.
Mardi Gras show, absolutely. We got to earn ourselves some beats tonight, Jimmy.
So when was the last time that you were in New Orleans for Mardi Gras?
It was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, and it was great. I don't go down to the French Quarter for Mardi Gras. There's great parties going on in the outdoor neighborhoods, and it's really fun.
I mean, you're a pretty cool guy, Ray. You got bars in New Orleans. We're going to give a shout-out to our sponsor. We're going to talk a little bit about Ray's bars in New Orleans. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. It's the culmination of information from passionate beer wholesalers. And check out Beer Cloud and other mobile apps that they have at GreatBrewers.com. It's about beer education on GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. If you have any questions, you can email us, beersessions@gmail.com, or you can call in live tonight, 718-497-2128. We've got two great guests on tonight, Evan Klein and Craig Freimark from the Barrier Brewing Company on Oceanside, Long Island. But first, Ray, we're going to talk about New Orleans and the DBA bar.
Yeah, well, I just want to say right up front that we're having a great New Orleans party at our DBA bars right here in New York City in Williamsburg. We're having live music with Jesse Carolina and the Hot Mess, and we're having King Cake and Beads and Masks. The same thing in Manhattan. We're having a big party out there. There's going to be prizes. So if anybody's got Mardi Gras ideas tonight, they should definitely stop at one of the DBA bars. It's going to be fun.
So why did you open a bar in New Orleans?
Well, everybody asks that question. The basic reason I opened a bar in New Orleans, down there, obviously, it's a drinking town. There's a lot of drinking town. It's also a culinary town. They have some of the best restaurants in the country down there, and people told us we were crazy bringing a good beer, good whiskey, good drinking concept down to New Orleans, because all the people wanted was, you know, huge-ass buds. And that's all well and fine, and there's a lot of fun to be had on Bourbon Street, but there's a lot of shit going on down there away from Bourbon Street. And we opened up DBA in 2000, and we had a slow beginning because we had a pretty good list and people were like kind of intimidated. But once the restaurant people, the chefs, the service people in the restaurant industry kind of got wind that we were down there and we had a great beer selection, we got filled up pretty fast. I mean, it worked out real well. And we opened our second place called Mimi's down there. And another aspect about it is down there, you know, a bar owner is a respected member of the community. We pay our taxes, we employ people, and we're part of the whole trade industry down there, the whole tourist industry. In New York City, we're not treated quite the same, and you know that as well as I speak. We're kind of treated as we're not a respected member of the business community as bar owners, necessarily.
So you like New Orleans?
I love New Orleans.
So Evan and Craig, have you guys ever been in New Orleans?
No, I never have.
I've been there once for a couple days, but you know, I was just kind of passing through.
Do you remember any of it?
Not really.
That's what a lot of folks say.
It was really hot. I remember that. Really hot, really humid. But it was a great city. A lot of good music on the street. It was a good time to be had.
Do you think that they could make good beer in New Orleans?
I think you make good beer anywhere. Yeah.
Really? So what are the bases of making good beer? I mean, for real, because
these guys both look at each other.
You know, there's water. I mean,
we're still trying to figure that out ourselves. No, you got to start with high quality ingredients. That's definitely number one. You got to have a good water source, which, you know, we're lucky to have out of some nice aquifers out on Long Island.
But I mean, water can be manipulated to a certain degree, can't you?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, you can duplicate certain kind of water.
Yeah, it's understanding the process from start to finish. You know, basically, like Craig said, you know, really trying to source the best ingredients you can get. and understanding, like I said, from A to Z, brewing it, fermenting it, packaging, coming up with recipes is, you know, that's a very unique process for each brewery and brewer. You know,
I was reading some of the questions that you guys answered for the show, and one of the things that you guys pointed out, and this is like, it sounds like the obvious way to do things, but it was a surprise to me. And you guys imagine the beer before you brew it, and you guys kind of plan out and diagram it and source the materials prior to actually brewing the beer. And I guess it's intuitive. That's the way you'd have to do it. See, I'm the kind of guy that kind of plows through things. It's like, oh, I'll put a little this in there, a little that in there, and see what it comes up with, you know? But you guys actually have to come up with the concept of what you're making prior to, and then work backwards to build it.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, because in order to sell the beer to outside accounts, you have to register the beer with the federal government as well as the state. So you kind of have to have that initial thought in mind. So if you want to make an India Pale Ale, you kind of have to start with that notion, what you want the alcohol percentage to be, what you want the color to be, what you want the hop character to be, the malt profile. And yeah, then we've both been brewing for a number of years, so you can know what ingredients do what, and you just kind of, work it back that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
so tell us a little bit more about how you got started. So you have Barrier Brewing in Oceanside, Long Island, and how did you start that?
Going back to the very beginning, I started home brewing in like 2006, and basically, bought a kit online, came with a recipe package, and just followed the instructions. And a month later, we had a nice wheat beer that we were, drinking it, and it was pretty cool that we were actually getting drunk on something that we created. So it kind of just like turned into, it started as that, and then it just I got more and more into it. Started reading whatever I could find, brewing, anywhere from once a week, and I have a good friend base that acted as a tasting panel, and so we went through the beer pretty quick, and then it just kept evolving and evolving, and then pretty much after two batches of pre-made recipes, we went onto all grain, and we just started making our own recipes, and just trying different ingredients and coming up with different results, and then after about a year or two of that, I kind of figured that this is, I really love making beer. I love, enjoying it. I sharing it with friends. And then I started looking locally for breweries to work at or intern at. And I was lucky enough to get called back by Six Point. They brought me in, and I interned there for about, 6, 7, 8 months. And then
how was that?
It was awesome.
At Six Point.
It was great. It was really
those guys are kind of weird over there, though,
No, it was a great.
We got Shane Welch, the brewer here. He's going to be on in a little while too. So.
No, it was. I couldn't have asked for a better experience. Everyone there was super nice, and obviously they're a great brewery making great beer. And out of all the breweries in the area, I couldn't have asked to be brought into a better location. So worked there for a year and a half, 2 years or so, and then kind of was also kind of figuring out what I wanted to do for my own brewery, and basically in January 2009 started really hitting the ground trying to figure out, looking for a space and starting the permit process, and October 2009 I signed a lease in the building we're currently in, and then you need a lease in order to have all your licenses and permits through the Fed and state. So that was about an 8 or 9 month process.
The question is, what did you steal from Six Point?
Nothing.
Recipes?
Just experience.
Just experience.
Yeah.
couple kegs missing.
Yeah. So October 2009, then the first beers were coming out in June 2010, and that's when we started selling to outside accounts. And
so, what are some of the beers that inspired you?
It's a good question.
Because I'm lucky enough at Jimmy's number 43. I get to buy a lot of your beers. I've had a brown ale. I've had a porter. I've had IPA. I've had a pale ale. They're all like them. They're flavorful. People like them. Are those your favorite beers that you're making now? Or are you just trying to make a beer that that'll work for you?
I think, well, I mean, I think for both of us, we really like making as many different beers as possible. I mean, that's why we're currently brewing 14 or 15 different styles. Partially because, yeah, we enjoy making different beers, and we enjoy a wide range of different beers. One week we might really like the Ruthless IPA. Another week we really might like the Stout. Another week, you know, the Cycle Saison that we're drinking now.
We're drinking which beer right now?
It's one of our newer beers. It's a Saison called Cycle. I'll let Craig say a little about
Cycle, like bicycle?
Yeah, same. Minus.
Oh,
the
it's
bike.
Pretty cool. Like, that there's like and, a, what kind of hop is this? It's very interesting.
It's a couple different hops in there. There is some Sterling hops for bittering in there, along with some Northern Brewer, and then it gets finished toward the end with some French and Belgian hops, some Streusel Spalts, and some Styrian Goldings, which is kind of a nice herbal floral. But it's very kind herbal. Of gentle yeah. quality to it, and that suits this beer well because it's only 4.2%. It's it's the lowest gravity beer that we make, and we did that by design because we wanted to kind of emulate the traditional saisons that you would have found centuries ago along the French and Belgian countryside. Mm-hmm. They were beers that were brewed by the farms for the field workers and mm-hmm. the laborers who were out there toiling all day, needed something to quench their palates and kind of rejuvenate them, but not inebriate them because they had a lot of work to do. So it was really supposed to just be kind of a thirst quencher, but also still provide a lot of flavor. So it was
this
enjoyable
has like
to
a ginger
drink.
Quality to it.
Almost yeah,
like,
I think
like a ginger ale kind of.
Well,
thing,
the saison yeasts have a really dynamic flavor profile to them, which is why when you use, I mean, this is a pretty simple beer. Only three malts and in hops in very low dosage. So most of the flavor of this beer is coming from that yeast, the Saison yeast.
Why do you call it Cycle Saison?
Partly, I mean, the cycle of the seasons. Saison okay. is, you know,
sense.
Means season.
And you could probably also go on a bicycle ride and drink this beer.
Exactly.
And keep riding. It is nice. Exactly. It's got this like, kind of soft smell, almost like grass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a grassy smell.
It's the beer that we find ourselves drinking. Quite a bit during the brew day, just because you can, go over, pour yourself half a pint.
Continue to work.
Right. It's weaker than Budweiser.
Yeah, it is, actually. Yeah. It is. But it's got a lot more flavor, I think.
Absolutely.
It has
oh,
a similar appearance, though.
I wasn't going to say anything.
So you guys, we would consider you a nano brewery?
Some, I suppose
do you,
we would
do you use
fall,
that term? Is that term
we,
relevant?
Yeah, we try, well, I mean, technically, I guess, in the eyes of most people out there, we are, just based on our system size, because it's only a one-barrel system, but we have 17 fermenters, 17 one-barrel fermenters, so we're putting, this year, we're planning on brewing anywhere between 500 and 600 barrels this year, and that's brewing, you know, 12 times a week, 12 different batches, 12 batches a week.
That's a long...
It's a lot of beer for a very small system. And,
yeah, I mean, some pub, you know, brew pubs are brewing that amount of beer in a year, or even less. So,
with much larger systems.
Right. So while we, I suppose, technically fall within the classification of nano, that is two and a half barrels or less per batch, we don't necessarily define ourselves like that or see it. We're just a brewery. Craft, micro, nano, whatever you want to call it. We're a brewery out in Oceanside, Long Island, just trying to make the best beer we can.
And you got a couple of guys helping you out, right? It's not just you two, right?
No, it's just us.
The two of you.
Yep. So we're brewing it.
Wow.
On a brew day, we're brewing four batches of beer, which is roughly 12 hours. Plus, we're kegging four batches of beer, cleaning those four fermenters to knock out those four beers we're brewing that day into. At the same time, doing a couple deliveries and, you know, potentially washing kegs. And
are you guys bottling?
Not currently.
So it's all draft?
It's all draft. And we do growler fills on the weekends out of the brewery.
Right.
Evan, what are some of the bars in New York City where we can get your beer on draft?
Jimmy's, number 43. Rattle and Hum. All three of the dive bars. Pony Bar. And then in Brooklyn, there's quite a few. Beer Table, Beer Craft,
61 Local,
Franny's.
We've had some of your cask beers on.
Yeah, DBA's had a good number of casks that we've been filling, and we do casks on special requests. You know, whenever we can. because we enjoy doing that.
Tell you what, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to talk more with our guests on Beer Sessions Radio. There's a lot of good things, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m., tune in to Flash Talks Cash, hosted by Joanne Flash Fleming. Flash Talks Cash is a weekly talk show discussing personal and small business money issues. The show examines current topics from the financial tax world and the ways it impacts your wallet. The focus is to help people and small businesses find ways to make money, save money, spend money, and know what to do with your money when you get it. Again, that's every Thursday at 4:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
What's your saison like? Hello, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. This is a really cool show right now. We've got I got Shane Welch from Six Point, my favorite brewer for a long time, and some of his proteges here, the guys from Barrier Brewing, Evan and Craig, and Ray Dieter and Jeff Gorlikin from Six Point. This is a pretty cool room. Jeff and Shane at Six Point, you guys have a pretty cool project coming up, it's called Beer for Beasts. And I like that project. I like when beer people do events. And tell me a little more about that. How did that start? It's pretty exciting.
It started over some beers.
So like most things.
Exactly. Like most bad ideas start over beers. We didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. But I had been talking about doing a sort of a big cultural fest. Cultural meaning not necessarily beer-centric, but all things about culture that are great. So we would have an element of food, art in form of dance in this case, and then beer, which is the genesis of all culture, and throwing it all together in one event and then tying it into an anniversary party, and then also showcasing a lot of the creative talent that's entrenched in the community here in New York, and particularly in Brooklyn. So we rounded up a posse of really creative people and put this together, and now it's sort of over time it has morphed into something bigger than we thought, because it's the people that it's incorporating and the people that it's touching in terms of the collaborations has exceeded us our expectations. So on this day, we were originally going to release 16 new different beers at once.
16
new beers at once. That's
very ambitious.
But, I mean, a lot of them are, they're not exactly made with the intention that they're always going to be regular offerings kept in stock. They're just kind of like, these are beers that were specially made for this event by the Six Point crew. So we were thinking originally that we would just use archived beers that we had been made or accumulating. But we were unhappy with that, so we decided to just go off on a tangent. And now what's happened is people are getting really creative with what they're doing in some of these styles, including a beer that I'm going to be making on Thursday that's made with Hawaiian Punch, which is really awesome. You know, Hawaiian Punch, the...
Yeah.
So this is Beer for Beasts.
It's beer for Beasts because... all of the proceeds for this event are going towards the New York City Humane Society. and they're definitely worthy of a donation. They're not.
We're not
freeloaders. The facility. Where's that located?
Yeah, where are we going to be going to for Beer and Beasts?
Beer for Beasts is going to be at the Bell House, which is on 7th Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenue in Gowanus. If you want to make Beer for Beasts with us, there's still some time. We're doing session ales like the week before, so we still use 007, and we're thinking about just banging out like 4 or 5 great cask ales, like 3.5% to 4.5%. And maybe even have them on firkins at the fest.
Oh, wow.
But so it'll be a really
How many beers have you made so far for the event out of 16?
We're up to 24.
Wow.
Right now. So we wanted to do 16, but we may pop 30.
What's this beer, Bree? Bree just brought
a lovely beer. Bree is bringing in beer.
Give you one guess.
Isn't Bree supposed to bring us cheese?
So, and what day is it? What's the date of this event?
March 26th.
March 26th.
There's two sessions.
Bell House.
And strangely enough, session number one is going to sell out first. It's almost sold out. And that's the afternoon one. It goes from 1 until 5. So it's kind of weird. I thought New Yorkers would want to do the evening one, but apparently not.
Well, that's cool. Well, let's tell us, you have another beer here that's kind of new for you guys. It's the Zare Crisp, which I like a lot. Why did you come up with that beer? Because so long you were making ales, and now you have this very crisp kind of lager beer.
Lager beer has gotten a bad rap, but that's because I think the collective amount of effort that was put into ales over the past 30 years by American brewers trounces the effort that was put into lager beer. The only people who are really brewing lager beer consistently with creativity, finesse, and passion were the Germans. And almost all the microbreweries and brew pubs and craft breweries in the United States focused primarily on ales, if not exclusively. So in getting to know these beers and traveling over there and getting to know some of the more archaic styles, it really sparked interest and that had been kind of worn down by always doing ales. And I was thinking about getting into spontaneous fermentations, and we started doing stuff with that, but I think lager beer is the next frontier. It's funny how things are cyclical too, because right around 1850 everyone globally started gravitating towards lager beer because it was so new and so unique and so clean. And it's funny that right now, it's still to this day, though, it gets a pretty bad rap in the craft community, but I think that they can be really awesome. I mean, I particularly remember a time Craig and I, and Jeff was there too, we were at a brewery or a bar, actually, in Bamberg.
Bamberg, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a brewery that made a Rogenbach and it didn't taste like any lager that you would normally have. I mean, when you're making Bock beer and then you're incorporating rye into it, you're going to get a whole... And it was assertively hopped, too. It was probably 35, 40 IBUs. For you non-beer geeks out there, that's like a pretty strong pale ale hoppiness. And when you combine that with all the interesting things that are going on with the other malts, it made for a really awesome beer. So this is just merely the first expose into that whole realm of lager beers. There'll be more.
All right. That's cool. Ray, what's your choice, lagers or yields?
Well, you can't compare it like that. I mean, I like apples and I like oranges. But I got to say that the more I got into beer from the very beginning, the more I started to appreciate the subtleties of lager. And especially when you go to a town like Bamberg, Germany, which is just one of the great beer cities in the world, without question. And I mean, that's where you get your Rausch beers. That's where you get the great Keller beers, which I never understood until I went there and actually went to a Keller, carved out of the side of a mountain. And they have beer that they age themselves. These guys, they have had this Keller, this like look like a hobbit hole in the side of a mountain with an oaken door, and they save their beer and they age their beer in this mountainside. And they had like a car battery hooked up to like Christmas lights And it was like, you know, it was kind of a man cave, you know, but the beer they kept there was amazing. I'm so privileged to have had that experience. It was great. And one of the things about lager, too, I think one of the reasons that I think a lot of brew pubs gravitate to lager is because, or to ale as opposed to lager, because you can, I mean, ale's ready faster. I mean, lager, by its definition, has to be aged for a bit, and it takes a while. It takes longer for the fermentation process than it has to be kept, you know, in the fermenters for a while and aged. Whereas ale, you know, it does its stuff, then you put it out there, unless you're you know, barrel aging it or doing something else to it. So it lends itself more to, I think, a brew pub kind of environment. But I love lagers. I'm a big fan of lager. That's a long answer.
Jimmy, you like lager?
I do like lager.
Yeah,
I like brown beers. Now, last week, going back to Six Point, it was a really cool week. We featured a lot of Six Points last week. There was a big Timeout promotion, and we did a beer dinner. We did all brown beers. We did your Timeout for Porter. We did your Coffee Bock. We did the Otis Stout, and what else? The Diesel Stout, and Brownstone. The Brownstone.
You might have thought we were Duck Rabbit.
Yeah,
that's another beard geek joke.
No, I don't know the beard geeks, but I like the brown beers. I'm into brown beers. I like Dunkel Lagers, and you know, brown's okay.
You like Dunkel Lager or Dunkel Locker?
Oh God, you are totally geeking out,
Shane. I forgot how much fun we have with you. Come on,
I was banned. And then
we got your protege. We got your protege Craig. Just last year, Craig was on here talking for Six Point, and I love this beer community. We've got, you know, offshoots of Six Point. We got Barrier now, and I mean, how do you guys fit into all this? We'll talk more in a few minutes, but. You know, you guys are starting real small. You're starting from nothing with Barrier. You guys feel like a brewery, and yet you're just like, what, a garage with some equipment. I mean, is that all a brewery needs to be?
Well,
because we always think of the brewery has to have, like, you know, capital, and, you know, it has to be this. It seems like the barrier to entry are very, very high.
I mean, believe it or not, Six Point is basically a garage with equipment as well. That's,
I mean, we probably started. The only thing that's different is the size of the tanks, but as far as the configuration, it's pretty much the same.
The square footage is about equal, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it the right way. I mean, these brewers, like them, they have a lot of integrity. I mean, it takes a lot of you need to totally surrender to what you're doing if you're going to make this choice. You can't go halfway, and that's what they've done. They're completely married to this project, and it's inspiring.
That's good, because you guys are going to make $1,000,000,000. It's such a rewarding industry, brewing.
He's right. Another thing, too, is what's more impressive about what the Nano Breweries do is you have these guys that are making their beer 2 kegs at a shot, and you have all these other guys who call Six Point and say, hey, do you guys contract brew? I want to start a brewery. And you're like, okay. And they say, well, you make beer for me. And then the first thing you think is, you just said you wanted to start a brewery, but now you want us to make a beer for you. So you have all these guys that are gals or whomever that think they can start a brewery. Just put a label on a can or a bottle and Joe's Brewing Company. But it takes a lot of commitment and suffering, really. You know, a lot of support from your families to start a brewery. And make the beer yourself, because, you know, it's kind of a fool's errand until you get to some kind of volume where you can actually, you know, keep a roof over your head and all that other stuff.
More specifically on the economic side of that, what he's saying, like in business speak, is that there's a lot of burn time. So the burn time has to be absorbed, like what Evan mentioned earlier in the show, you can't even get a brewer's license without a lease. But since the application takes 8 or 9 months... Unless you have a sweetheart deal with the landlord, like you basically just paid 8 or 9 months rent with no brewing, and that's hoping that it actually gets approved on time, and then that it's going to take usually at least a couple years to get it up to a level, at least a couple years where you actually can sell beer for more than what it costs for you to make it across all board and paying everyone like a reasonable legitimate salary. So, the burn time is what weeds people out, I feel. And how it's overcome is people who have, like, passion and they can go deeper inside and they can say, I can stick this out and I see the light at the end of the tunnel. and hopefully the light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train.
I got to say that it reminds me a lot of the whole opening a bar business, too. It's like, you know, you've got to get your lease and make your application for your liquor license. That could take 3 to 4 months at least. And, you know, if one T is not crossed or one I is not dotted, they send it back and you start all over again from scratch. And you got to sit around and wait for it. And then, you know, it's any I think any kind of home business or, you know, anybody that's going to follow a dream for a business like we're in has got to have a lot of passion and a lot of patience. And it takes a long time.
Cool. We're going to take a short break in just a moment. We'll talk more with our guests, Jeff, Evan, Craig, and Shane, who's our surprise guest. We come back on Beer Sessions Radio.
I'm going to tell you how it's going to be. Are you going to give your love to me? You know my love will not fade away. Oh, well, you know my love will not fade away. My love is bigger than a Cadillac. I try to show it when you're driving me back. Your love for me got to be real for you to know just how I feel. A love for real not fade away.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here tonight with Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. I'm blown away by our guests tonight. I got my hero, Shane Welch, from Six Point, and the upstarts over here, Evan and Craig from Barrier. We're having a lot of fun, and we're drinking some good beer. We had Six Point Zare Crisp, and now we've moved on to, what's the beer we're drinking now, Evan? It's from Barrier?
It's Barrier Brewing, the Bulkhead Red. It's just like a 6.3% ABV, hoppy American Red Ale. Four hop varieties, a ton of hops, nice malt character as well. Caramel, toffee, a little bit of chocolate in the background.
It's really like really good.
Really citrusy, spicy, kind of hop flavor.
And we're going to give a shout out. We had a regular listener named Josh Heim who has, we challenged him and he made some pottery for us. He made these really awesome, Ray, what are these things? They're mugs?
They're beer steins.
Beer steins made out of pottery.
Yep, and ceramic beer steins. That's a Beer Sessions Radio. I took a few photographs. I'll give them to Jack and maybe he can post them on the website. It's really generous and wonderful.
You can check out joshheimpottery.com. He's a great young potter. And thanks, Josh. I know you're listening to the show every week. We have a really great email question. Today is Mardi Gras, and, Ray's our Mr. Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I'm doing the Mardi Gras mambo all around the studio.
So this is a good question. This is from Lorenzo T. in Brooklyn. Thanks, Lorenzo. It is, what is the traditional Lenten diet for monks? Do they eat anything at all, or is it just beer? I feel like Shane knows the answer to that one.
The answer is it depends on the monks, the order of the monks.
Period. That's the answer?
In what order is that?
Can you elaborate? Well, finish your pizza first.
Yeah, I'm eating a slice of pizza here.
He's got Roberto send us a pizza. That's pretty rare.
That was really, yeah, that's the first time that's happened.
It's because we have esteemed guests tonight, Ray. Not our usual guests.
Right.
He's talking about the Franciscan monks around Munich who invented the style of Doppelbach during Lent so they could sustain on a liquid diet. Then, yeah, they would not have any solid food. But I don't think that all monks would. I don't think the Trappist monks did that. I don't think all orders, that there's so many different types of monks, Benedictine, Cistercian, Trappist, whatever. And worldwide, I don't think all of them have that decree.
What about New Orleans? What do people do? Today's Mardi Gras. What do they
Tuesday.
Do tomorrow?
What are they tomorrow? Well, tomorrow is Ash Wednesday. They go to church and get their ashes. And it's funny in New Orleans. The day after Mardi Gras, I love the day after Mardi Gras because all the trees all over the city have beads hanging from them, from the parades, from people throwing beads off the parades, from beads being thrown around. So it looks like it's decorations. It's almost like Christmas time because all the colorful beads are hanging off of all the branches of the trees. Everybody's way hungover. You know that in New Orleans, no business gets done pretty much from beginning of last week till maybe Thursday because nobody's showing up for work tomorrow. But it's a mess. It's a fun mess, though.
Are you pouring any Abita beer tonight?
We have the Restoration Ale from Abita, which is actually a fairly drinkable Abita product. And we're also having hurricanes. Melanie, who is our bartender in Brooklyn, has a great recipe for hurricanes, which is a traditional drink down in New Orleans. But it's made with real fruit. It's not like the mix. It's not a Hawaiian punch with neutral spirit. It's real fruit, real spirits.
And a bitter twist of irony goes in there, too.
A tater twist of irony?
A bitter twist.
Oh, bitter twist. I thought you said irony. A tater twist.
And the drink is named Hurricane. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah. Well, obviously, yeah.
We're serving, actually, on that note, we have Abita's SOS. It's a Weizen Pils on draft tonight at Jamie's number 43. Some of that, the proceeds go to the golf.
Yep, they do.
Stuff.
They do.
Wow. All right, so small breweries, man. This is cool. What I like about small breweries, I like the beer. We've had White Birch on. We've had Hill Farmstead. We've had Lawson's Finest. And now in New York, we've got out in Oceanside, we've got Barrier. And there's another guy. There's quite a few guys on Long Island that we've met who we've enjoyed their beers. One of them is Paul at Blind Bat. Now, this guy, he told me that he actually makes beer in his garage, and his garage is licensed by the feds because it's a light industrial zone. I don't know. You guys want to speculate on how that became a licensed brewery?
You can I think in the eyes of the TTB, the federal department that governs microbreweries and the SLA, as long as the property is not attached to your house, it can. And I think it probably varies by township as well where you're located, but you need a separate location that the brewery is housed in because you can't have it in your dwelling. I guess you just gotta. It depends on where you are, but as long as it's attached, you could theoretically.
So Jeff, I was at Six Point Brewery last week, and you've said it a few times. You said, "Why would someone open a brewery in New York City? They should open 40 miles outside of New York." Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, you need a lot of land, a lot of space, and the cost of everything in this town is way too high. That's why everyone lives in a closet. But your bar would be three times the size. Your bar would be three times the size, even if it was just in a town like Philadelphia. But, you know, there's something to be said to trying to make beer in a city like New York City. And it's tough. It's a combination of 8 million people and brewing beer out of the back of now three garages.
Yeah, but I mean, if my bar is twice the size or three times the size, I'd have to find three times as many people to get there, which are not there.
That's true.
It'll be out in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly, exactly.
Not that outside of New York is nowhere. I'm not trying to say that, but
it is. The world completely revolves around New York. Everything else.
Evan, was it true for you? I mean, you're only just a stone's throw outside of the city. You're just outside of Rockaway, right? Not too far.
Yeah,
away.
We're like maybe 10 miles east of Rockaway.
Why did you open in Oceanside and not in Rockaway?
I live in Long Beach, and the brewery's only it's 10 minutes away from where I live. And you know, there's a good amount of bars on the island in Nassau and Suffolk County that pour the beer, not to the same degree that, you know, Brooklyn and Manhattan. I mean, the whole beer scene in the boroughs is much more, I don't want to say advanced, but it's just there's more people that are enjoying craft beer in this area in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and you know, they kind of gravitate more towards the whole craft beer thing, whereas, you know, Long Island, you got to work at it a little more to get the beer in places.
So what's a typical bar? Like, what's your favorite bar in your town? You're in Long Beach, or just like a regular bar. Just so you can name it, and we can give them a shout out.
Swing Bellies.
They're
a barbecue joint in the west end of Long Beach that pours, not because they pour Barrier. I was going there before the brewery was even open. But, yeah, they have like eight taps or so, fairly good beer.
What are the beers that they have on tap?
They usually have like a couple different Belgian ales, maybe like from Omegang or sometimes they're pouring a Belgian from Barrier, and they got some Saranac. They have full set. I mean, they have a decent selection.
Is it all domestic stuff?
No, they do some Let's see here. I think primarily it's all domestic, but sometimes I think they get like an import, like some, you know, German wheat beer, like.
So it's a decent list, but it's not quite what.
Yeah,
you get
and that's like, you know, that's the best you're in my area. You know, there's I mean, you know, in Massapequa, there's a place called The Good Life that pours good beer. I mean, there's a good amount, but
I wonder what the availability of good beer is out there. I mean, I know that, you know, distribution in the five boroughs is pretty good. You know, we have access to a lot of great things from all around the world.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure if it's the same thing out in Long Island.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a lot easier to find good beer in Brooklyn and Manhattan than it is to find it on Long Island. Just, and it's also, you know, you have to drive everywhere for the most part. The public transportation isn't what it is here. And like I said, I think the whole very artsy community that makes up a lot of, you know, a lot of the population in this area.
That's one thing I really miss. Like, I grew up in New Jersey, and one of the things I really miss about being there is like driving drunk. I used to love going out, having a few pops, and then just drive my car really fast down the turnpike. But now in New York City, it's just behind me now. You know,
you can't do that anymore.
Can't do it.
Ray, did you ever drive drunk and have a girl do something to you in the car? What?
Ray, you need to distinguish between the thoughts that you say out loud and the ones that you keep trapped inside your head.
I didn't say that.
I think this is the Mardi Gras show, guys. Come on.
I've earned some beads, Jimmy.
There's women coming to our window right now.
It's about time.
There's a police officer.
This is the Mardi Gras show.
I'm sure that none of us in this room have ever had a few
pops. Let's go back to the French saying. It's laissez les bon temps rouler. Mardi Gras with 6 points and barrier. Well, it sounds like the party I'm having at Jimmy's number 43 tonight, guys. But I like my brown beer. That's what I'm going to talk about.
So my plan is to, after the party tonight, I'm going to go to Zipcar and get me a car and head back out to that turnpike. Turn up the Bruce Springsteen.
I just got a text message. Heritage just pulled the sponsorship. So we're off the air in 5 seconds.
I like you, Ray. I like you on Mardi Gras. This is my first. Well, I don't know if we didn't. This is our first year hanging out on Mardi Gras. This is cool. Been on the air for 1 year and all right. I'm going to DBA Brooklyn tonight, guys. Come on. What's going on over there?
We got live music. Like I said earlier, we have.
You got any food there? You got Chop Shop Boudin or something?
We don't have Chop Shop. No, he's not coming out tonight. He's got other. He's otherwise engaged. He might actually be in New Orleans. I'm not sure.
Actually, I know where he's working. Oh. There's another place in Brooklyn called Dean Street, Brooklyn.
Have you guys heard that of guy.
He's making New Orleans food tonight. He told me.
But not at DBA. We have King Cake. And you know, one of our mottos that goes back to when we first opened up DBA in 1994, and that is every drink is a meal. So
I thought it was drink good stuff.
That too. I got a million of them, Jimmy.
No, that's the website.
Oh yeah, the website.
Drinkgoodstuff.com.
That's the URL.
Every drink is a meal should be a website too. I think I should work on that.
Bring us up to speed on how this happened. You're from New Jersey.
Correct.
And you have a bar in New Orleans and, or several, but in New York and, Brooklyn, Manhattan, and then New Orleans. How did that happen?
Well, they're all new places. So there's New Orleans, New Jersey, New York. It fits. It makes sense.
No, but it's just such, like a lot of times when you look at a restaurant or a hospitality group, it says New York, Los Angeles, Paris, Tokyo, Sydney,
right,
Chicago.
Yeah, yep.
And you got the New Orleans, New York connection. How did that come together?
No, Jimmy asked me before. New Orleans is a great place to do business. They have a lot of drinking going on down there, and a lot of culinary people and great restaurants. And it just made sense. There wasn't anybody down there really doing good beer, good spirits. It was kind of like party time USA. And then we opened up a bar, fun bar that actually happened to have really great things, and it caught on. And I love doing business down there.
What happened during Hurricane Katrina? Your bars were there.
We were closed down for a few weeks. That happened the last weekend of August 2005. We evacuated. I evacuated on Friday before the weekend. Actually, I wasn't evacuating. I was just leaving anyway. But we had just finished doing a bunch of construction, built a new stage, changed our bathrooms around. We have really good bathrooms down in New Orleans. And really large, good bathrooms and a big stage and live music and all that kind of stuff. Now, people complain about the bathrooms at DVA. I just want to say that it's not a system-wide problem. Anyway, yeah, we closed down from that weekend when Katrina hit, and we reopened in mid-October when the electricity started to be back on a regular basis, or semi-regular basis. But you got to understand, New Orleans, in the best of circumstances, is kind of a third-world city. It's more of northern part of the Caribbean as a part of the southern part of America. You know, the power goes out occasionally, you know, for no reason at all.
Anyways, just...
It just goes out. But we opened up at the end of the... towards the end of October, we're back open, and we did fine. You know, people started coming back, and I'm thrilled to be a part of the city, and I'm thrilled to have New Orleans in my life. It's a pleasure and a privilege.
So, you know, in Denver, the dude from Wynkoop Brewery... is now the governor of Colorado.
Of Colorado.
Do you ever think you'll go back to New Orleans and live there and become active in the community?
No.
Never?
Well, I might end up living there, but there's no way I'm... No, the politics down there is so filthy.
Okay, if you're driving after having a few drinks in New Orleans, would you get arrested?
No, well, in New Orleans, there's a law. You can drink while intoxicated as long as you have a loaded weapon with you. If you've got a gun that's loaded, it's fine. Because they have drive-through daiquiri shacks down there where you actually can go through a drive-through window and buy alcohol, buy a drink in a big cup.
That's great.
And the reason it's legal is because they don't give you a straw.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
of course.
If you ask for a straw, they'll give it to you, but they won't give it to you when you order your drink.
But then
your car.
Then if you have a straw, you could get arrested.
No, if they have a loaded weapon, you're good.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
It's fun down there. I love it down there.
This is a real Mardi Gras show.
You just got to understand.
I'm having fun tonight.
See, down in New Orleans, I spend a lot of time on my bicycle. I ride around town. It's a real flat town, so a bicycle is the best way to get around. And you just have to understand, as you ride around, like everybody else is drunk and has a weapon. So once you understand that, you know, it's fine. We're all good to go. Because they must assume that I have a weapon as well on my bicycle, and I can maneuver better.
Let's thank you to Josh Heim, Josh Heim Pottery, for these awesome beer sessions, beer mugs. They're pretty cool. And one last question for everybody. Okay, Shane, if you're going to make a beer in New Orleans, what style of beer would it be?
Doppelbock.
Nice. Ray, if you didn't have a bar in New Orleans, would you go there for Mardi Gras?
No, I don't think I would. If I didn't have it, it comes down to having a bathroom. On Mardi Gras Day, there's a lot of people down there, and you need to have a rest station. And basically, that's another reason why I open bars in New Orleans. So when my partner Dennis Zentek and I would go to New Orleans for Jazz Fest or for Mardi Gras, we actually had a place to go to the bathroom.
All right. Craig Feinmark from Barrier. Craig, what was your favorite beer from the weekend?
I had an Orval. Over on Saturday, and that's still, I mean, that was my favorite beer of the weekend, but that's also just one of my favorite beers in general. I think it's you're just incredibly well executed. I love the complexity. I love the I love everything about it, and I could drink that beer any day of the week and be satisfied.
Jeff Gorlikin, where can I find the Berserker Bock, your coffee Bock? Is there any place in New York that still serves it, or is it out?
It's sold out at our distributor, but tonight we're actually doing a Mardi Gras Brazilian style beer dinner at Back 40, and they got two of the last remaining kegs of the Berserker Bock. So I would recommend stopping by Back 40 tonight in Alphabet City, and we're also going to have it on tap at our event at the Bell House for Beer for Beasts. And no joke, I know people say this all the time that an event is almost sold out, but not for nothing. There's about 150 tickets left across the two sessions, so if you walk up to the Bell House on the last Saturday of March, we're just going to tell you to go home. So get your ticket.
Beer for Beast, check it out.
We'll tell you how to get home, though.
I have a question. Do former employees of Six Point get any type of discount?
There's a statute of limitations, and it's limited to four weeks. So.
All right. And Evan from Barry, what beers are you brewing for next week?
That's a good question.
Do you even know?
It's kind of up in the air at this point. I know there's one beer that we brewed about 2 weeks ago. It's actually a lager. It's a California common style beer called Simple that we brewed that we're going to brew on Monday of next week. And as of now, that's kind of the only one that's that's the only one that we know for sure is going to be Brewed Monday. But we'll be brewing 11 other beers as well, and we'll figure that out.
Well, guys, thanks so much. Thanks again to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. And for Good Beer Seal events, tonight Standings is having a Mardi Gras blowout with Abita. Sunday, March 13th, Blind Tiger Ale House celebrates Ithaca's 13th anniversary. And there are some big events coming up in the next couple of weeks. March 19th and 20th, Get Real New York, hosted by Patrick Donaher of Rattle and Hum, will have its second cast festival. And, of course, March 26th, Beer for Beasts, Beer Advocate, and Six Point. So check those out at goodbeerseal.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors, and thank you so much again to Ray, Evan, Craig, Jeff, and Shane for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
To put my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Boltley of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful. There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1-liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.